PC Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me.
Before we start, I think that someone should introduce Kenna at least once. Like, hey, everybody, here comes the amazing Kenna.
Aw, yeah, thank you, thank you.
She was in Office Space.
Yeah. Hope that I have another one in about 15 years.
Right. You love how people always reference that one.
Yeah, I'm like, that was 20 years ago.
Do you ever watch Between Two Ferns with Seth?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it, yeah.
And he's like, the one with Bieber, he's like, so you've had 3 haircuts. What's next for your career?
That's hilarious. Like,
okay, that was enough of an intro.
Long intro.
That was a long intro. Really, okay, good job.
Okay, so welcome to Kick It Naturally, people. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer.
Introducer.
Introducer today. I also have to my left here, Hottie Patati Will Schmidt, fitness trainer to the stars and watcher of Between Two Ferns.
So good.
Today we have our topic is, we're just catching up really on some Ask Tony questions.
Yeah, you know, we always try to fit one in at the end of the show, but it turns out that we blab a lot.
Yeah.
Like, we just don't shut up. Who'd have thought that it was going to be a problem where I wouldn't shut up?
Mm-hmm.
That's probably new for you, Kim.
Very counterintuitive.
Yeah. So we thought, well, let's just do like 4 or 5 good ones today and try and get a little bit caught up so people don't just sit there being like, when are you going to answer my question?
Yeah.
I had a question. Why do you talk about all this other stuff?
And you ignore me, so.
Yeah, so here we go with questions and things.
Okay, so if you haven't liked us on Facebook, now is your chance to do it before we start questions. We're not going to do any more questions until you go and you like Facebook. We're just going to sit here and wait.
Because we had too many already. I think we're going to start charging people to like the page now.
It'd be awesome. $1 to like the page. Uh-huh.
Just send it in the mail to $1.
And that page is Kick It in the Nuts. That's where we post all of our show topics. And
on
you guys,
Facebook.
Yeah, on Facebook. And you guys can ask us questions, or you can even say, hey, I'd like it if you do this show. And
somebody has said that before, and we listened to them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember which show it was, but I remember that it happened. That
Kenna,
they said.
Kenna said stuff.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
I said stuff. Again, Kenna. Thanks for the credit today.
Well, there's only 4 people on the show.
I built this company from the ground up.
Right.
You built it from the ground. There's not a lot
all
of
the way up to
all the way up
the
to
4
nearly
of us.
The middle. Okay, so I like that term. I'm sleeping my way to the middle. All right, so let's just go ahead. Y'all want to dig right in to some questions?
Yeah, let's do some
here.
Questions.
Let's do it. Okay, so Pam, a large number of foods give me a very sore and muzzy head, sometimes bloating of my face and body, and sometimes jaundiced-looking eyes. I don't have acid reflux or any problems digesting these foods. It's when they get into my colon that the trouble seems to start. Have you anything that might help? I am not overweight. This has been going on for about 30 years, but just getting worse. Sounds like you do have digestion.
Yeah, so I'll say I don't know, Pam. This is easy.
Yeah,
next,
these questions are easy.
We'll be done in the show in like 3 minutes.
Do questions,
but
more
if it's
often.
In her colon, then it's also part of digestion.
So here's what we think, Pam, because we have a lot of experienced people talking about this, and they'll say, "Well, I don't have acid reflux," or they'll start to work on their digestion, and then they'll start to experience reflux, and they'll be like, "Well, I never had reflux before. What's going on?" So, It definitely was some type of digestive issue at some point that probably created this problem. Maybe they've improved now, but maybe Will Schmidt could explain why someone might not think that they have acid reflux, even though they're not breaking down food properly.
Yeah. I'll get into that. I also want to eventually, after we get into that, I want to talk about the other major things that could be going wrong in digestion that could be causing that.
And can you also explain what it means to have a muzzy head? I don't know what that means.
I wasn't sure where they were going with that.
Maybe she meant fuzzy.
Maybe, but she couldn't think straight.
Yeah.
So it was muzzy.
But also jaundiced eyes. I've heard people look like doctors will look at your eyes to see if they're yellow, and I think it's something with your liver.
Yeah, they're bile refluxing and such, yeah. So many people potentially could not realize that they don't have sufficient stomach acid present, and they might not feel acid reflux symptoms of like the heartburn. That, I mean, if you're new to the show, you may think that acid reflux comes from having too much acid, which is a common misconception. The opposite is actually true, and we've said this, I think, every episode, at least three episodes. We talk about how if there isn't enough acid, then the valves that seal the stomach shut and tight will not be triggered to seal shut and tight, so food contents can get regurgitated and create the symptoms of acid reflux. If there is enough acid, it triggers those valves to seal shut and tight so you don't regurgitate anything. But also, if there is enough acid, it keeps the stomach sterile and kills off bacteria that would otherwise live there and create colonies. And those bacteria create alkaline metabolites or waste products that protect them and that are just part of their natural metabolic processes. So they like it when the stomach is not acidic enough and they can live there. And in their living there, they eat the food that you eat and they ferment it and create these waste products that some of which are gases that create pressure and that cause the valves of the stomach to slip open and that allows stuff to be regurgitated up into the esophagus. Some people don't feel those symptoms of things, of that happening if there really isn't any acid left in their stomach. Like if they had a severe H. pylori infection, they might not have any acid present in their stomach.
So they never feel that reflux at all, even though the stuff could be coming up.
Yeah, it might be happening. And it also might be the case where their anatomy is positioned in such a way where those valves are just less prone to having stuff reflux. It kind of depends on where that valve connects in the stomach and its vertical arrangement. So some people are less prone to feeling that reflux, but that doesn't necessarily mean that everything is okay and that they're acidifying their food effectively. So that food may be fermented rather than digested, and it may have slower transit times than it should otherwise, because if there isn't acid in there to trigger the valves of the stomach to cause gastric emptying or the release of the food from the stomach into the duodenum, then there can be problems with that. All those bacteria can then ferment the food and create endotoxins, which I think are probably one of the biggest sources of PAM's ailments. And those endotoxins can be created and present, one, as I just kind of talked about a little extensively, if there isn't enough hydrochloric acid to kill off the bacteria. But two, there could be other things she's eating or not eating that are like problematic fibers or foods that really don't belong in the human digestive system that could be feeding bacteria and creating endotoxins. Even if she does have enough stomach acid, like if she ate like a whole lot of yogurt or a whole lot of other fermented foods or certain fibers that we just aren't very good at breaking down, like certain raw plants, it could be giving the bacteria the food that they need to create endotoxins, and those endotoxins could be directly causing these other symptoms of bloating, fatigue, itchiness, muzzy head syndrome.
Right, muzzy head. So, and let's look at some of the things, because she's saying that there's specific foods that cause allergic type reactions, like where her face is bloating. So it's not just that she's bloated, but when somebody's face is bloating up and they're having allergic-like reactions, sometimes there's food sensitivity issues going on. And we did a whole episode. You can... It was episode number 16 on food sensitivities that you can hear more about that, and we'll link to that in the show notes too. But in order to create a food sensitivity, in most cases, and this is not always like a food allergy, like a peanut allergy, that can be a much more severe thing, but with food sensitivities, Will, do you want to explain a little bit about how when a food is not digested correctly and if it gets into the bloodstream, then the body can have a reaction to that, like it's an invader.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about it pretty well in most of your books. I think maybe in all your books, do you use like the peanut butter sandwich metaphor? Or
I think in most of them.
All right, yeah. So like your body knows what to do with amino acids and peptides and lipids and sugars and such, and it can metabolize those effectively, like once they get into the bloodstream. But it doesn't know what to do with peanuts or bread. You know, it needs to get
taco salad.
Right. It needs to get. So if you like took a syringe with a taco salad in it and injected that in your arm, it'd be very, very different than eating that taco salad and then getting all your digestive juices to break it
down. Depending on where you bought the taco salad, the the response may not be that much different. Yeah. Because if it's that toxic
right.
from somewhere.
Right.
But generally speaking, you want to digest food before it gets into the blood.
Yeah. And a lot of times we just don't, because either we don't have sufficient stomach acid, or we don't have proper bile flow, or we have intestinal damage and like permeability to the intestine where stuff literally leaks through before it gets broken down correctly. So all those things can end up flooding the bloodstream with foodstuffs that are not appropriate to be there. Like they're nowhere near synthesized enough or desynthesized enough to be bioavailable. And instead, the body encounters them as a foreign invader and toxin, and that can trigger an appropriate immune response. And we may you may end up getting blanketed or diagnosed with a term of having some autoimmune disease, but in reality, maybe your body's actually acting appropriately in light of what's going on.
Right. And when you look at, when you said that the food that's not digested can become toxic and make the body a toxic environment, and that could be contributing to those jaundice issues in your eyes that you're seeing, in our free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com, we teach people how to look at simple tests they can do at home. And one thing that you could look at is when you look at your urine and saliva pH. If your saliva pH is really low, then that can be an indication that the system is a little too toxic and maybe bile is not moving to help remove those toxins from the body. And that may be contributing to that issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had a question for her. I mean, I don't know. I'm not the doctor here.
You want me to ask her?
Well, yeah, you can ask her. I'll ask you in the next week. But when she says my colon is where the trouble seems to start, but like, what's it doing? What does she have? Diarrhea?
That's a good point.
You know, constipation. I mean, what's happening?
Right, because it's likely that the trouble is not beginning in her colon. Something else is probably going wrong before it ever gets there. But if all of a sudden it comes flying out, like a fire hose, and she has really loose stool, she might think, oh, the colon is where things are going wrong.
Mm-hmm. And then her face being bloated. Well, my face gets bloated when I drink beer. So maybe she's drinking something that has like something in it that's making her like, she says she's not overweight, but maybe she has a couple of beers and then the next day
her stomach
coffee.
Could be creating beer through fermenting all this horrible
stuff. No, literally some diabetics I've heard got DUIs.
Yeah, we've talked
serious?
About
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, because like they are so not processing glucose that the glucose gets like fermented into
cheap
alcohol.
Date.
Yeah, and they can get literally intoxicated with blood alcohol levels, making it illegal to drive from consumption of carbohydrates that ferment
wow.
in their bloodstream.
Wow.
Like a little incubator, they're like a little brewery.
Uh huh.
Wow.
But with swelling, it is different than we in the digestive course, we talk about bloating. We're usually referring to the upper abdomen, like the stomach, can also be in the intestinal tract. But when we talk about, and there's different digestive reasons why that might happen, or different diet choices that could cause that to happen, or if you ate a lot of Pez.
Yeah.
Kind of Pez, but yeah. When we look at like swelling or edema in like the soft tissues, it has a lot to do. Well, there's a number of different things that can cause it. Like you said with beer, some people, if they eat like potato chips or something like that, and they'll blame the salt, but
yeah,
it's often
sugar.
It's often, yeah, the starches.
Mm-hmm.
And other times, like, they might just get bloated from these foods that seem really mysterious. Like, I don't get why. I thought I ate healthy, and they're still puffy. But when we look at, like, what causes edema, we have a coach course where we talk really in-depth about, like, how cells work and how energy production is made and or how energy is produced. And it gets into fancy stuff about how water is positioned in and between cells. And I don't think we want to go to the depth of that.
When we talk that deep on this show, people usually turn to the greatest 80s hits.
Yeah, but a big thing to know about, and it really relates to how I think Pam might be onto something when she says like the problem could be in her colon. So let's say, yes, for a number of different potential reasons, there could be a lot of fermentation occurring in her digestive tract. Like maybe she didn't have enough acid to sterilize her food, or she didn't have good bile to break down fats. So there's some problem where bacteria are going crazy in her colon and her intestinal tract, and they're creating all sorts of lactic acid. That lactic acid gets into the bloodstream. And normally, when our cells make energy, they make a certain type of lactic acid that gets recycled. And it's a normal part of the energy production process. Like, think of like car exhaust. But sometimes there's different types of lactic acid that certain bacteria can create that doesn't get broken down right. It gets in the way of the process, like someone like putting like a banana inside an exhaust pipe, right? And it causes a backup of all this lactic acid builds up of this incompatible form of lactic acid, and it can ruin energy production. It can just screw up the way cells make energy, and that screws up the whole like delicate balance of electrolytes and water
inside and outside the cell. Yeah. It all goes to the wrong place, right? And things swell up.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and also it could be something as simple as, you know, insulin is too high and that's causing things to swell. It could be just a flat out an allergic reaction to the food or a food sensitivity issue to the food.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of options for your face to get all big.
Yeah. But when you come down to it, like whether it was from insulin or elevated estrogen or elevated lactic acid or nitric oxide, all these different things that could do it, but it ends up coming down to a problem of like, what's happening to the cell and its way to make energy and how that affects how where water and electrolytes are.
Right. And so if you do the free 4-week course, you'll start to figure out some of those things at least. Like you can at least knock out a couple of things or figure out that, oh, I haven't pooped this month. So maybe that's a problem. And I didn't know that was such a problem. I thought that was a personality trait, was that I was constipated. Nobody ever taught me that that's a problem that I could fix. So if it is a colon thing that where you're suggesting that it's too loose or too plugged up, you'll learn how to improve those things and start looking at some very common causes for a lot of what you're dealing with. Now, she says she's been dealing with it for 30 years. So if you fix digestion and you have created food sensitivities to these foods, that could continue for a while since the body has had like a four-alarm fire alarm going off every time you ate that food. So even when you start to break it down better, you may need to remove yourself from those foods for 30, 60, 90 days. And we talk about that a lot in chapter 9 of Kick Your Fat in the Nuts.
Yeah, and you may have a lot of like undesirable metabolic products built up in your tissues over that if you've been having these sorts of issues for that long a time. So it may take a while. Like we like to talk about taking sort of an agrarian or a farmer's approach to health. Like a lot of times we'll expect like, oh, you did this diet for a week and like, well, I didn't lose a pound
my
in a whole week
yet.
And it was a lot of effort and it was like a full week. You were totally on track. But if you were like a farmer taking over like a city block that used to be a skyscraper and now you're supposed to grow tomatoes, like you might know, like, okay, it's going to take a little while to get a good crop out of this soil that, like, was concrete a second ago, you know?
Right.
So give yourself some time and try to pay attention to, like, the little changes that you feel. And then with time and doing the right things, you may start to see more and more improvement. Like, if you've got, like, a bunch of, like, varicose veins and, like, all sorts of like cosmetic changes to your skin and face and this, like, and you may not have that change overnight, but you may feel like less heat or less redness or less inflammation.
I ate something.
Can
I didn't feel like
a varicose veins with your face?
You can heal it. Yeah. Your
Seriously?
Body is your body.
You know, somebody's requested that too. I can't remember who it was.
The spotter veins for sure.
We should do it to show
you
on
can.
That.
And there's some active, like really interesting things you can do to like proactively reduce that inflammation. And then there's other like some stuff you can do that has a kind of a dramatic effect right away in the amount of inflammation present, but then other stuff, like I'm saying, takes this more growing healthy crops sort of like longer perspective of changing what's present metabolically inside the cells and giving them a chance to rebuild
and doing it over time. You know, it's not a thing where, okay, I'm going to do the right thing for a few weeks as a farmer, and then 1 week I'm going to take a blowtorch and just fry everything on there, and then the next week if I go back on track,
you're
I can't
about
expect
me being a farmer. Aren't you?
I don't know. You like to farm, Kenna?
But
slash and burn farm.
Yeah. So some of these things that will take longer to happen need a lot of consistency.
But a good time frame to like see maybe a difference improving would be like 30 days to do something, try it out for 30 days, and see like. You can kind of see something going in a different direction.
A lot can happen in a month. Like, but it really depends on the thing. Like, And this is why when I work with clients, I like to try to help them manage their expectations of understanding like the specific things that they're working on and what. So like, for example, if you don't have a hiatal hernia, you could potentially like correct acid reflux in a week or two if you're doing the right thing.
Really,
right?
Quickly.
But if you have varicose veins, like you may have to correct digestion and then start eating right and then like let your body clear out all these
and
things
then go and, get then laser rebuild,
and then you know correct vitamin deficiencies and things like that, and then your cells could over time kind of like healing scar tissue, you know, it might take months or even a couple years for certain things to like evolve and change.
That reminds me of my sister when she was in massage school. They toured this place that was there is some kind of thing like they want to freeze your fat off or something
like
that.
Oh, yeah, I did that. I didn't do it. I worked at a place like that.
Yeah, so she said that then when you went and talked to them, that they would say, okay, we're going to do this, but once we do it, the results take 4 to 6 months to show up. And during that time, we want you to eat right and exercise.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. You know, they told me I was $6,000. Too fat. They told me I was too fat at the time to get my fat frozen.
Really?
You can only be a certain amount overweight, like 30 pounds.
And you have
pounds,
to diet.
And you have to, all this stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Wait a
it's
minute.
A big old racket. And I would see people like leave, and they'd take them out through the back door because they would have like a huge-looking weird tumor on their leg or wherever they had it done.
God.
It was like deformed now.
Oh,
so they would
God.
Take them out the back door so nobody would see them.
Wow. I would rather do my magic wand clinic.
Magic wand clinic?
Yeah, I just like wave a wand and then say, okay, now, like it's going to take 6 months for that to work, but in the meantime, do your diet, take
exactly.
these supplements.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
exactly.
less damaging
fixed
than
digestion.
Freezing. I have had one client freeze their fat though and it did not go well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
It's not like freezing your eggs to have a baby. But you don't ever come back to get it. I want my fat back. Can I have it? So I am suggesting next week, write it down, boys, varicose veins and spider veins. I want to hear all
that's
about
good,
that.
Yeah, it's a good call.
Okay. All right. And you know what? If you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig into this stuff for yourself for more advanced teachings for, you know, yourself, your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com, and I have to say I've taken it. It's awesome. I mean, it's a ton of information, so you have to keep going back because yesterday I was misdiagnosing myself all over the place. I had everything wrong. And I was like, oh, I guess I can go back and look at that. And then I did, and I was like, oh, yeah.
Cool.
Oh, yeah.
Glad you like it.
Yeah, it was really good.
People
really
are
good.
Raving a lot. It seems like we did something right. All right, let's see what Kelly has.
All right, Kelly from Tennessee. I have hit menopause and my body has gone crazy. I'm eating good and exercising and the weight is piling on. Help, what can I do?
So we
go
did
get
a
your
whole,
fat frozen.
Yeah, freeze your fat. And then in 6 months after. So episode 15, we did early menopause and we talked a lot about why people might run into menopause early. But even if someone is hitting it on time, it's usually
still not fun.
It's still the same reasons that are creating that. They're just showing up when they normally show up. So the first thing to think about is that somebody says, I'm eating good and exercising. And a lot of times that's not accurate because what mainstream looks at as eating good is really not eating good. So that's the first thing that I see clients say is that I'm eating well and I'm working out, but it's not working. I must be stuck like this. And when you look at what they're eating, it's usually they're trying to eat low calorie or low fat or some horrible thing that's just not in conjunction with a human body. And then even worse, it may not be in conjunction with their specific chemistry. So let's talk a little bit about why someone would hit menopause and why menopause would show up. And then let's talk about how those issues could also create weight gain, even beyond the hormonal changes that are going on when somebody moves into menopause.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a very metaphorical like way of talking about it, you can think of it like, I don't know why I thought of Star Wars, when like a plane gets hit and like they've got to shut an engine down, you know, to preserve like shield energy or something like that. It's very metaphorically like far-fetched, similar to like with menopause.
You're a boy.
When your body doesn't have sufficient energy and resources to conduct daily affairs, it you know, it can shut down the whole reproductive thing. And this doesn't have to happen late in life. Like, we see a lot of girls early in life missing their period. Like, what would that be? Like, when, you know, we don't call it menopause when they're 19.
Right.
But it's, in effect, the same thing is happening. And if you ran, like a hormone profile on someone who hasn't had their period in a couple of years, even if they're in their early 20s, like, you might see a lot of similarities between what's going on there versus someone who's at the typical age of menopause, of like severely elevated estrogen, possibly like protein deficiencies, weak digestion, low blood pressure. These are not always, but very commonly present in people going through menopause, because they've got these metabolic issues piling up and a lack of resources coming in.
And as much as I like the idea of explaining an issue that only happens to women by using examples from Star Wars, I do think that was awesome.
It's kind of like a guy writing a book on menstrual cramps.
Right. What kind of idiot would do that?
So dumb.
Well, I don't have menstrual cramps, so I must know how to do that. Anyways, you know, when most people are having trouble with their period, we often see that it's digestive issues and an inability to bring nutrients into the system. And when there's not enough nutrients, minerals, you know, vitamins, everything that's needed to build another human, Mother Nature kind of says, well, let's shut down this reproductive process because we don't have enough gumption here to build another human being.
And
in that case, Yoda would usually say...
Totally say, like, you don't try, you only do menopause.
You don't have resources.
But to be, like, a more serious about, like, what... Not always, but... And this is the real value of looking at your body's own digestion and personal chemistry and the different biomarkers that we teach you how to check when we go through the free digestive juice course, or more extensively through the health coach course. You learn how to detect what's off and what's the problem. Like, if you don't have enough stomach acid to break down protein, you might be eating plenty of protein but not getting it. And if you're not getting enough protein... That could be a big reason why your body's hormones are out of balance and you have severely elevated estrogen. The whole understanding of estrogen is also pretty wacky. Like, it's been promoted pretty heavily by drug companies that like to sell estrogen for its health benefits, even especially at times of menopause. But actually, estrogen gets higher and higher as people go into menopause. It's a stress hormone. Think of it more like cortisol and less like the equivalent of testosterone.
The less people kind of correlate it with being a woman.
Yeah, like it's like the female testosterone. It's
like I want to be an awesome woman, so I want more woman hormones. Right.
But it's not that. It's much more like cortisol, and pretty much everybody's on board with not wanting more stress hormones.
Right.
Stress hormones are hormones that your body's creating because of a stressful situation, whether it's because it's trying to do something very big, like create a baby or run a marathon or survive a famine. Like, that's when stress hormones get elevated. So your body's catabolizing itself because it doesn't have enough resources coming in a way where it can just keep up with the demand. There can also be things that are getting in the way of your body using the resources that it has. Like in the case of a diabetic whose cells are damaged and they're not able to burn sugar correctly anymore, that sugar can start to build up and creates other stress hormone problems where they're not able to access sugar, so they start creating all these ketones. And it's a whole kind of different issue. But the same kind of thing can happen with severely elevated estrogen. It can block our cells from making energy in a healthy way and create all these other problems where we start to have tissue breakdown and the symptoms of menopause from the elevated estrogen.
Right. And so what the medical world does is when they see this, they say, oh, well, your hormones are out of whack, so we're going to give you more hormones to try and balance that out. And the reality is that a lot of times the body is just using these hormones to try and get the body to function correctly because there's not enough resources there to allow it, or maybe some toxin is causing too many resources to be used for waste removal, or, you know, some kind of issue like that. But for most women, if they can fix digestion and bring in more nutrients, along with removing that food that is undigested that is becoming a toxin to the body, by removing that toxin, all of a sudden you're helping the body function a lot better. And the menopause symptoms can go away at that point, mm-hmm. a lot of times.
One thing I wanted to say, and maybe I'll mention this and I just have muzzy head, but you said something about like eating good, like what is her eating good? Is it like lean cuisines? Is it like Weight Watcher meals? Is it like fat free, you know? And even like you say in the course, and you've said a million times, both of you, like even if you're eating like all natural food or organic or whatever, you're not eating processed, if your body can't process it because you're having an imbalance or digestion issue, then that's like a toxic load. So, you know, it's like you have to make sure what you're eating is clean and then make sure that you're able to, like, digest it.
Right. So now let's transfer this over to how do some of these symptoms make someone gain weight?
Yeah. So let's say you heard it was healthy to eat a lot of complex carbs and unsaturated fats and soy proteins instead of like eggs.
And you're using I Can't Believe It's Not Butter to avoid saturated fat.
Right, and you're cooking with olive oil. All this, you know, like you're doing all of these things that you've heard were somewhere healthy for some reason. You are shutting down your body's ability, your cell's ability to make energy. Let's just look at the example of if you had a bunch of unsaturated fats, for example, like you heard eating fish oils was really good. We did a podcast episode about
that
this
last week or two.
Yeah. So say you did that, or you just ate out a lot at restaurants that cooked with canola oil, which is super common, or grapeseed oil, and you're eating all of these unsaturated fats, which damage the mitochondria and block them from being able to do their normal job of oxidizing glucose, meaning using carbohydrates for energy. Now that the mitochondria can't turn that sugar into energy, it'll build up. And the cells are stressing out because they're not getting the energy that they need anymore from those carbohydrates. So you start to break down these other, like, you start to break down your proteins, like your own muscle cells, your own tissues, and you start getting weaker bones, and all this calcium, like leaving the bones, builds up in the soft tissues, so you're getting all these weird inflammation and such. And the whole time, you're not burning any of that sugar. So your body instead synthesizes that sugar with the fats and creates all these triglycerides. So you start to get high levels of bad cholesterol, and you're not oxidizing the glucose, and instead it's getting stored as fats. So that's one way.
Something has to happen to them, and a lot of times if the body's overwhelmed, it'll just get stored as fat. And there's also toxins coming into the body from a lot of that junk food that people think is healthy, that can get stored in fat cells, and food that isn't digested, some of that can also get stored in fat cells. So it can be just as simple as that or as complex as all those other things.
Mm-hmm.
But when something is wrong enough for the reproductive system to say it's time for me to shut down, then a lot of those things that are wrong could also be contributing to excess toxins being stored in fat cells as well.
But even if you were like the healthiest person in the world and had best digestion in the world, at some point you're going to go through menopause, right?
Yeah, that's my assumption. Yeah. And basically the strength of digestion fades in most cases as we age. And that's why when women get to a certain age, that menopause shows up, because digestion starts to get a little weaker. And plus we're usually moving a little more catabolic. There's a lot of things going on.
That'd be awful to get pregnant when you're 70.
I think on a theoretical level, like with what else we're learning about like nutrition and how cells work, and also like other things that we can do with biotech, I think eventually it could get to a place where we learn how to maintain a metabolic state that doesn't enter menopause. I think that could be possible.
Oh, gosh.
I don't think it's a natural occurrence, because even if like you're doing the work of trying to avoid unsaturated fats and things like that promote estrogen and testosterone, you still get a little bit of it in your tissues. Like I bought whole milk, like grass-fed dairy milk.
It's just the outdoor toxins that you get.
Right. There's all sorts of environmental pollution. Yeah. That stuff kind of adds up and increases stress, impairs metabolism of the cells, and eventually like ruins it, right? But I think there's a lot that we can do to reduce that toxic load and reduce and stabilize and enhance metabolism to lengthen the span of our healthy lifespan.
Hmm. All right. Oh my gosh. Let's see. So Tracy from Grand Junction, Colorado. Hi, Tony. I was wondering what you
think. Hi, Tracy.
I was wondering what you think about probiotics. I am seriously considered trying your method, but I never jump into anything anymore because so many things have failed. I am halfway through your book, and it resonates as truth. I'm just wondering how the digestion thing really works. I know the only thing that helps relieve some of my symptoms sometimes is kefir. Kiefer Sutherland? Yeah. I also know that I have not been successful with my diet lifestyle change for 20 years since I had my tubes tied. Now my immune system sucks too. How does that fit with what you have discovered? I really need to make this make sense and not be for someone's profit. I'm a 42-year-old teacher of kids in jail, and my health weight is starting to become a big deal. Thank you for taking the time to read this, Tracy.
That was a lot of stuff, Tracy. And so let's just say that probiotics are all right. They're all right.
I think there's a lot we don't know about the people. There's a whole, just like there was that whole human genome project, there's the whole human biome project right now, which is like kind of the equivalent of like researching the genetics of the different bacteria and their connections to brain function and mood and like mental.
And the biggest disconnect that's there right now is that there's all this research going on. There's all these things that we do understand now and hints of things that make sense. But at the same time, no matter what type of probiotic you're talking about, it all gets grouped together in this topic of probiotic. It's kind of like saying we have to find a cure for cancer when a lot of different cancers are very different and what would fix them is completely opposite. So you have to consider that with probiotics too. Just because one probiotic may be beneficial for a specific person doesn't mean it's going to be beneficial for everybody, and it doesn't mean that all probiotics are beneficial for everybody either.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that like an inordinate amount of the right kind of probiotics are still good for you. Like, I knew a lot of people that were really into the body ecology diet for a while, and they would do it and they'd be all excited the first like week or two that they're doing it, and with every meal you have fermented foods. And all of them would start to just have this really weird look in their eye after about 3 weeks. Like, I just started feeling weird. Maybe they initially benefited from like the lactic acid and digestive assistance that those bacteria gave. But you do not want too much lactic acid in your system. We were just talking about how that can get in the way of your cells creating energy. So just taking probiotics inordinately, like even if they're the right kind, too much is not a good thing. Sometimes we use specific ones like L. salivarius to help combat certain things like H. pylori, but the basis of it being really healthy, I think you'd agree, Tony, is like for your regular digestive system to be functioning well. So like stomach acid being strong and present, bile being present and flowing correctly to create a nice balanced pH where the food is moving in a timely manner at the right pH so that the flora that is there is dealing with foods that have been processed correctly and that are moving through the system efficiently.
Yeah, and so I think our main kind of summary of how we view probiotics is it's really more about the terrain of the digestive system, because if that terrain is there, probiotics are going to come in from some type of food, and they're going to grow and live and be happy. But if that terrain is wrong, nothing you put in there is going to fix it. So we kind of view using probiotics, maybe even in some higher doses for small periods of time, when there's a reason. Like if someone had chronic diarrhea, they basically fried all their intestines. If somebody was on antibiotics, you know, there's situations where it's good to, okay, I'm going to load up for a week or so. But like even in our protein powder, we put a very small amount of a specific probiotic to kind of view it as, you know, it kind of comes in with a lot of foods. So if you just focus on setting up the digestive and all that digestive tract correctly, then the probiotics are going to form and thrive.
I don't know anything about probiotics, but I mean, the ones that you drink and stuff that I've seen, like at Whole Foods and everything, don't they have lots of sugar?
A lot of those do, yeah. And a lot of people feel like, oh, you need the sugar to feed the bacteria, so we're going to put a bunch of sugar right in the drink so that it goes right in, and maybe they'll eat some of that sugar while it's in the bottle, and then it won't be as sugary when you consume it. But there's also a lot of problems with specific prebiotic type things and how we digest them. And
yeah, certain like prebiotics like inulin are known to cause like horrendous gas. And even like the most common, I think they actually have to by law include acidophilus in yogurts, like because it keeps the pH low enough to kill off other pathogenic bacteria. But the type of lactic acid that the most common probiotic agents, like the ones in yogurts, use, mm-hmm. create is the type of lactic acid they create is not the kind that your muscle cells create. There's D-lactic acid and L-lactic acid, and the kind of lactic acid that the ones that curdle milk, mm-hmm. like that change fluids into that curdled sensation, that's not what we want in our mm-hmm. system. That's the wrong kind of lactic acid. So going heavy with those like fermented dairy products is overloading you with this undesirable form of lactic acid. Hmm.
So let's go back to Tracy's question a little more, though, and dig into some of the other things, because, you know, she's saying that she's tried all these things and failed. And just know, Tracy, that we see this a lot and we hear about it a lot, and understand that you've probably tried a lot of diets or a lot of things that were not appropriate for your chemistry. And what people do is they see that something worked for their friend or some fancy star on a TV commercial talking about something. And so they think, oh, well, that'll work for me. And then they do it and it makes them gain weight. And it's because we all process foods differently. So the first step is always, always, always to look at your chemistry, to look at what's going wrong with digestion, what needs to be fixed there. How are you processing carbohydrates? Do you need more or do you need less? And once you look at your body, then you have a place to start from, and then you can have more success instead of just throwing darts and trying 75 different things over a 20-year span.
Yeah.
She should do the digestion course, the free one.
Yeah, she should definitely start there. And I think that like I think you're right, Tony, to say like, oh, just trying one dart after the next. Like, just if she just tried probiotics, like, even if she needed them, that's not going
to
fix
right. If you were not making enough stomach acid to break down your food and you put in probiotics, you're going to be like, oh, probiotics don't work either.
Yeah. And if you're someone that says, my immune system sucks, like, first of all, I don't think it's your immune system that's the problem as so much as what it has to deal with that's the issue. But if you're someone who's at that state where you're getting sick all the time, I do not think that the addition of simply probiotics and no other like massive overhaul of like correcting your digestion, learning what's off in your chemistry, changing your whole diet, like that has the potential to create a healthy internal environment. And I think getting caught up with the question of just should I use probiotics or not, how much, what, I think that's a little bit to the side.
Yeah, it's a kind of a fine-tuning thing as we view it. It's not a big thing that's going to fix stuff. There's more foundational things to look at. But another thing you could do is listen to our episode number 2 that was on the common cold, and that will explain a lot of reasons why someone might, you know, get sick often. But you're going to see that a lot of those issues come back to an inability to digest food and pull minerals out of the food that mm-hmm. you're eating.
Yeah.
All right, Nicole from Washington. Hi, I'm having a hard time eradicating H. pylori. I've been on 3 different types of triple therapy. I test negative for it after the therapy, but it always comes back, right back. I can't read. I do not want to take any more antibiotics as I feel they are killing my intestines. I read your list of natural remedies of starving H. pylori. I was just curious if you take them all together. I'm already taking mastic gum, but none of the others. I noticed 2 or 3 act as an antibiotic. Is it safe to take them all together? Any help would be great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Done.
All right. I guess, so in that protocol, if you go to kickitinthenuts.com and you search for H. pylori, you'll find this huge blog post about H. pylori protocols that a lot of people use and have success with. And what we find is that most people can't wipe out H. pylori using one thing, even if they're using some kind of horrible the antibiotic thing that just wipes out everything on earth. They usually still have to use something else too. And it seems that they can create these like biofilms, and they can also climb up into the mucus layer in the stomach and kind of hide. So you might wipe out a whole bunch and seem like they're gone, but then some that were hiding up there could crawl out later. And so we've seen some people do well to do like a run of the protocol for a few weeks and then maybe stop for a few weeks and then come back and do like a half a run again to wipe out anything that was left. But it just seems like most people don't have any success unless they use two or three things in conjunction with each other. Like maybe you're using mastic gum every few days, and then maybe you're using like the D-limonene type stuff, or the pylorosin is really strong and powerful. But if you kind of alternate days sometimes, and maybe you're not using all of them on the same day, and you know, kind of overburdening the system with all this stuff, but you maybe switch days back and forth, people seem to have better effects by doing it with that route.
All right. Debbie from North Carolina. I cannot get my sugar, carb, crap, food, beer cravings under control. I've tried everything. I'm 53. I'm 137 pounds, but feel bloated and full all the time. I'm very active, but always find myself wanting to eat like crap. Frowny face. Help.
Well, since Debbie has a frowny
face. I'm with you, Debbie.
Yeah,
it's hard, Deb.
Since she has a frowny face, we should help her.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to see the frowny face.
No.
So the biggest clue that Debbie gives us is that she feels bloated and full all the time. So what would that mean with digestion?
Probably that she's, well, I think she's saying that she's constipated, but probably because she has very low stomach acid.
Yeah, and if food is just sitting there for, you know, 8 hours, then she's just going to feel full because she is full.
Yeah, it's literally full. And food that's just sitting there, like, is not being processed, so you're not getting energy from that. So your body's still going to feel a craving for more food because it wants more energy. But you're also going to not, you're not really going to want to eat it because you haven't moved it out of your system yet. So you're going to feel like this internal conflict, literally an internal conflict.
It's internal.
Yeah. Doesn't she, like, now she's craving all these sugars because that's the only thing she can really, like, she can't, so something's wrong with, like, either she can't digest proteins or fats because of the acid, then she's so only eating this. And
Kenna's right, because if you can't, good job, Kenna.
See, it's the Health Pro course.
Uh-huh. It's also because you got an introduction today.
That's true. Probably why you're smart. It's also because I've been with you for 8 years. So let's hope one thing stuck in there.
Yeah, so what goes on is when somebody can't break down protein, a lot of times they can break down Crunch and Munch and Pop-Tarts, and all these processed sugars and carbs are easier to break down and turn into sugar that can be used for fuel. And you put a piece of chicken or steak in there, which would have given you, you know, like a slow burning log in the fire type of fuel for half of the day. But if you can't break it down, your body can't use that. So it's like, hey, I need the stuff that I can use. How about some Nilla wafers or a beer? And so then you're going to find yourself going back there. So it's not a willpower thing. It's a, your body knows how to at least get something that allows it to function. But if you can fix digestion, then all of a sudden you can eat real food and you're satiated for hours.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the most common things clients will say to me is like their carb cravings are gone. And it had everything to do with focus. It wasn't, I never once said, just try to not eat them. Like it was always just like improving stomach acid, improving bile flow, and then eating foods that you could finally digest.
And there can be two sides of this too, because now eating, you know, improving digestion can certainly reduce those cravings for most people. But if you still eat those things, then you're reminding your body, look at how easy it is to access this stuff. And your body's like, hey, let's have more of that. But for most people, if they can go 8-9 days without any of that junk, all of a sudden they don't want
once
or need it anymore.
Once they get their digestion working.
Once
then
the digestion's working. Right.
A mess.
Right, because if you try to eat real food without improving digestion, you're just going to be miserable. You're going to be bloated and feel
you'll be asleep
horrible.
At your desk.
Yeah.
Whenever people are getting cravings, like, always, like you said, start with like getting it so they can actually digest these other foods. But then once they do that, I think also people sometimes don't realize how often they need to eat. So they'll have like a really good breakfast, they're digesting it really well, and then it'll be like 3 p.m., you know, and they'll be like...
I used to think it was the 3 meal a day.
You know, and they're like, oh, it only works for like 4 hours. I'm like, yeah, well, eat again before you get starving, you know? And once you throw in like a little protein shake or something like that, or so a meal that has like lower glycemic sugars, proteins, fat, salt, water, so you stay hydrated too, all of a sudden like your body doesn't go into that hypoglycemic low blood pressure panic state, and you can just keep about your day.
Once you get to that state, all good judgment is out the door, and golden grams in a taco shell is a good idea.
Like a donut never sounds like a great idea to me, like an hour after eggs, but like 6 hours after eggs or something. It's so nice.
Yeah, so that's the first steps, Debbie, is look to see what's going on, look at your physiology, what's going on with your digestion, and fix those foundational things, and then you'll have a chance to win. Right now, with what sounds like going on, it doesn't sound like you have a chance to over willpower your way past that.
Okay, for all of our listeners today, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so you can check out their service. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook to find the link. And like I was preaching about the healthprocourse.com earlier, you really should go there. Healthprocourse.com to learn more about how to become a health coach or just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself and your family. All right, and... Let's just keep going with the ads. If you want to learn more about how to look at your own body chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com, or you can head on over to Will's page, mybodyofknowledge.net. He's got a lot of great information and blogs on there, and also exercises and stuff you can do. So check those out.
Yeah, so I'm all done saying words.
Oh, thank God.
Bye-bye.
Bye.